Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and each week we talk about interesting new subjects in the paranormal field or UFOs, and I bring on exciting new guests, and tonight is no different. I have a very exciting guest. I'm really, really excited. He's really quite accomplished. I hope you all enjoyed last week's show when we had on Marla Phillips and Patrice Cole talking about healing. It was very interesting. We got a few callers in, so it was a lot of fun. But tonight, wow, tonight is going to be a very interesting show. Our guest tonight is Michael J. Couri. That's K-O-U-R-I. And he's actually a very well-known psychic medium who has appeared on many, many television and radio shows, including, you know, The View and many other very popular shows, practically every radio show you can imagine.
Just about. It seems like every show I've been on.
And just a really interesting guest. He's actually a psychic medium and a ghost hunter and has written many, many books. So we're very, very blessed to have him here tonight. And Michael, I want to thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Sure. That's great. I actually don't call myself a ghost hunter, though. I know that's sort of a popular term these days, but I created a title for myself several years ago. I call myself a parapsychological investigator. And the reason I used that term was I wanted to fit into my own niche. Not that I want to be, you know, snooty and stand away from other people to do this work, but because I am a psychic medium and I can actually see and hear spirits and communicate with them, my goal is to help the spirit find peace, to find, you know, make peace with the memory of their life and then be able to move on to wherever it is we go after we die. And so because I can actually see them and work with them, I decided that I needed to have a title that was a little different than just a ghost hunter. You know, ghosts are everywhere. When we talked on the phone a couple months ago, I was telling you about all the places that I've investigated in my backyard in Burbank and Pasadena and the San Fernando Valley and where right. We live, you know, and there are so many spirits everywhere, and there's so much work out there for all the mediums that are now sort of coming out of what I call the broom closet, you know, and want to do this work as well. But one thing I want to say right off the bat is that this work is very dangerous work. I mean, you're an investigator, so you know that yourself, right?
Oh, well, sure, absolutely. You don't want to just go in blindly into these situations.
No. Dabble in something you don't understand. You know, if people are playing with Ouija boards and candles
exactly.
And things, that can be a very dangerous thing, and they really need to know that before they just open the portholes and allow any spirits to come through, low energy or high energy or those in between, you know.
Right. So. Well, how does that happen? I mean, cause, you know, I've investigated several ghostly encounters, and I would say there's a good portion of them have started because somebody used a Ouija board.
Oh, absolutely.
So what exactly is going on there? Are we opening a door?
I think that when you play with a Ouija board or even like tarot cards, I mean, tarot cards can be safe. It's a game, basically. You know, I mean, I know a lot of people that are, you know, psychics that read with tarot cards, and they don't need the cards. The cards are sort of like eye candy. But with a Ouija board, you know, or a cup turned upside down, or children that are, you know, sitting in the dark saying, "I believe in Bloody Mary," you're invoking spirits. You're invoking low-energy spirits who are floating around out there that were, when they were human beings, you know, they weren't really nice people. They were, you know, con artists, or they were murderers or rapists or, you know, other people that just did a lot of nasty things in their life. And so when they get to the other side, they're not evolved. They're not advanced as we hope to be when it's our time to die. So they roam the other side looking for a way to come in and wreak havoc on the earth plane. I know this sounds so Star Trek and so, you know, Bewitched, but it really is true. And there are a lot of negative energies out there. I don't want to just say entities, because in the 30-plus years that I've been investigating haunted houses, I've only had like maybe two or three really negative encounters. I feel very blessed and very lucky to be able to say that. As you wrote on your profile about me, I started working with Dr. Thelma Moss, who was one of the first women in the United States to get a full-fledged PhD degree in parapsychology, and she had a lab that she taught at and worked out of at UCLA in California. And I was introduced to her when I was 16 by my counselor, who was a nun at the Catholic school I went to, And I wanted to know more about these abilities and why I could do what I could do. So she took me to a lecture, and I met Thelma. And at the end of the lecture, we went and had coffee, and I basically blew her away. I kind of read her like a book, and she was just fascinated. I mean, I told her the name of her dog when she was 3 years old, and she grew up in the Midwest, and I told her about her grandparents and her great-grandparents and her spirit guides, and she couldn't believe it. She says, well, how do you know these things? I said, I don't know. I just, maybe shaking your hand, they just flashed before my eyes. So because she was so fascinated, a couple days later, she called my counselor, who then, you know, asked me if I'd like to be a part of this 5-year study of psychic children, even though I was a teenager. You know, it was still kind of cool. And I jumped at the chance because I thought, wow, what a great opportunity to be able to go and learn from someone who is so advanced as Thelma and try to understand what psychic abilities are all about. Now, of course, when I was doing this, that was kind of an unheard of thing at that time. The only ghost hunters I knew of back then would have been like Richard Sennett of Ventura, and Hans Holzer I think he's in New York. Right. And there might have been a handful of other people here and there. Lloyd Auerbach was probably doing stuff then, too. But this was back in like the late 70s, 1979, 80, sort of in that area. So Thelma took me out on investigations with her, little mini investigations, just she and I and a couple of people from the lab, you know. They didn't have magnetometers with them. They basically used their own abilities, their hands. My hands are my tools. They had, like, thermostats and things, but, you know, they weren't what we see today. And we went to many, many places, and we'd go out on these investigations. I remember one house was a Frank Lloyd Wright house in Pasadena, and it was way back in the hills. And right. We didn't even get out of the car, and I already knew who the spirits were. I mean, the spirits knew my names. It was like they came running up to me, oh, my God, Michael, you can hear me? Thank God. Why don't other people talk to us? I mean, I would hear this, and I'd be relaying this to the lab, to Thelma and her assistants, you know, giving them the name. Maybe this one's John, and this one's Mary, and this one's Susie, and this one's Tim, you know, and here are their ages, and here's what they do, and here's why they're here. Most of those people didn't even know they were dead. They died in a fire, not in their home, but they died in a fire at a hotel when they were on a trip, on a family vacation,
How could someone not know that they're dead? I mean, I've heard that as an explanation for ghosts, and I believe it, but I just don't quite understand how someone could not realize
at some
point.
Well, it's a simple explanation if you look at it this way. And this is what I do as a parapsychological investigator. I try to educate people about the logical thought processes of humans and of spirits, okay? So if you're asleep and you're in bed, you're in a deep sleep, the fire comes, it sweeps through the hotel, it burns everybody alive who's in their rooms. I mean, I don't know what the situation was, but they all perished. Whether they died of smoke inhalation or they died of the burns, they all died, all four of these family members and their dog.
Right.
And the dog was in spirit, too.
Oh, wow.
And if you think about it, you're burned to death. There's no brain. There's no mind. All you have left is spirit. And what is spirit? To Christians, it's what they call the soul. So in my mind, in my understanding of how this works, and by the way, I'm still a student. I'm an expert, but I'm also still learning. But in my mind, I believe that the logical explanation is that spirits have only the last thoughts of the moment of the last breath of their life and everything before. That's what they have embedded in the soul. They don't have a brain. They don't have a mind. They cannot see the future like we can. They can't. That's a misnomer. A lot of people think that all ghosts see the future. No, they don't. Spirit guides do. Guardian angels do. But ghosts usually do not.
Wow.
So, if they, let's say that a fireball swept through the rooms of that hotel floor.
Okay.
And they were all killed instantly. Or let's say they were hit by a train, or a car, or struck by lightning, or had some freak accident that just, with a snap of a finger, snuffed out their life.
Okay.
In spirit, they wake up as if they're still alive, and they don't know that they're dead. Are you into old movies at all?
Sure.
Okay. Did you ever watch the old Topper movies?
Well,
in the story of Topper. All right, there's a story of Topper. Topper's this banker, and this man and this woman, they're wealthy socialite couple, and they're driving through Mulholland Drive or some road, and they lose control of the car, they crash into a tree, and they die. But the door opens up, and they both get out of the car, and they don't realize that they're dead. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, they look back, and they see their bodies in the car, and the woman says, oh, dear, I think we're dead. So, I mean, they find out they're dead, and then they go to their banker, who's Topper, and they start haunting him, and that was a movie, and then it became a series, and it was very, very popular in the 30s and 40s and 50s. But that sort of gives you an idea of the scenario that, so they don't understand they're dead, so they go back to the place that is most familiar to them, and what would that be? The number one place would be their house, their
right.
place of business, their school where they attend every day. They go back to the places where they are a creature of habit, and that's where I come in, or you come in. A psychic medium, now, different psychics, you know, I think everybody is psychic, but not everybody in the world is a medium. That's how I describe it. But different psychic mediums can do different things. Some of us are clairvoyant, which means we can see into the future and into the past. We're clairaudient, which means we can hear them. There's, you know, the audio is working with them. And clairsentient means that we can sense them. Some people only sense spirits, and they never hear them or never see them. And other people see them but never hear them or feel them.
Well,
and some people have all three, like I do. What's that?
How would you explain that? I mean, is that just a peculiarity of someone's physiology or just...
It just depends on who you are and what you're open up to, what you're open to.
Okay.
It depends on your development as a human being. Like, everybody's different. Some people can't love. They can only hate and be mean and nasty and hit people, especially when they drink. You know, some people can only love and can't be mean to others. Some people are doormats. I mean, some people... Everybody is different,
right.
But some of us have very finite similarities, right? Like, you and I both investigate haunted houses. Are you psychic?
I've had, yeah, well, I don't call
Are you
myself
intuitive?
That.
Okay, are you
Absolutely.
Intuitive?
All
right.
Absolutely.
All right, so that means you're psychic, because intuition is a psychic gift.
Well, so it's, I mean, yeah, I believe it's something everybody has, like you say, but some people have worked on it and developed it. And
that's right. Some people are more advanced than others.
Right.
And that's really what it comes down to. I had a man send me a bunch of photographs today. He lives in New Jersey or someplace, and he every morning he gets up to go to work at 4 in the morning, and he takes these pictures, and he gets orbs in his film, or what he thinks are orbs, you know. And I get thousands of photographs, you know, a month from people all over the world that have seen me on all the TV shows I've done and hear me on Coast to Coast and radio shows like yours. And you know, they all want to know, is this what I'm getting? Are these orbs? And unfortunately, what he's getting are not orbs. They're probably dust particles. And he was telling me that his friends say, oh, it's just dust. You know, orbs are not perfect. I mean, are perfectly round. And no, they're not. It's kind of a funny thing. So I have to email this guy back and say, I'm very sorry, but the pictures that you're getting are probably either reflections of, and he's taking pictures of his yard in the snow, right, with a flash. So it could be reflections
okay.
of light that bounce up that the digital camera happens to capture, because digital cameras are so exacting in what they capture. Or it could be dust on the lens. When orbs are perfectly round, when the circles are perfectly round, I mean, they're not orbs. Orbs are always a little bit off in shape. And usually when you see orbs, there are thousands of them, like showers of orbs. And what that is a spiritual entity is trying to take on its human shape. Do you remember, do you ever watch Star Trek?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Okay, everybody does. Everybody has at some point in their life, I would assume. Remember the old Star Trek where they'd go in the transporter machine and they'd pull a lever down and then the people would turn into particles and
right.
the particles would disappear and then on the planet they would reappear? To me, that's what orbs are. That's what they are physical, I'm sorry, they are spiritual entities trying to take on the physical shape. They're morphing back into their physical body so that we can see them.
Right. Well, that makes sense, because I mean, there's tons of accounts in the literature where people have seen orbs come into their room or whatever, and
exactly.
suddenly it expands.
Millions of them, right.
Expands or coalesces, and then it's a full-blown color apparition of...
That's
you
right.
Know,
I think Gene Roddenberry was really ahead of his time when he was, you know, writing these scripts and creating these stories. I often wonder, I never got to meet him, I wish I had, but I wonder if he dreamed these things up or maybe if he was channeling this information. You know, flip phones are like the transporters, but the communication device that Captain Kirk had.
Right.
if you think about it, you know, beam me up, Scotty. You flip your phone open and you talk. That's our cell phones. I mean, he was way ahead of his time. So I think it's really fascinating. But going back to ghosts, I mean, ghosts come in all shapes and sizes. Children, animals have spirits. I'm working on a book right now called Journey Beyond the Rainbow Bridge, all about animal spirits and where they go and what their life and death process is that they experience. And how did I get this information? Animal spirits come to me, too. In fact, I've been able to communicate with animals on a spiritual or a telepathic level for about the last 20 years.
Wow.
And the more I do it, the more accurate it gets.
Is that like mostly cats and dogs or other animals?
Oh, God, I've talked to elephants and llamas and camels and giraffes and alligators and all kinds of stuff. Parakeets and lizards and iguanas. And, I mean, I've got stories even of a hippopotamus that haunts Laguna Canyon down in Orange County. And she was a part of the old Lion Country Safari, which was this idea that you could get in your car, come to Orange County, and in your own car you could drive these roads and you could be a part of wild animals as if you were in the jungles of Africa.
I remember, and we did that, actually.
Really? I never got to go, but a girl in my class went when I was in the fifth grade. And unfortunately, she and her girlfriend were sitting in the back of their Country Squire station wagon playing with the remote control of the window, and a lion came in and ripped off her face.
Oh, my God.
And it was a nightmare. She survived it and had lots of plastic surgery, and her family sued them, and eventually the park closed down. But there was a hippopotamus that got out. She escaped, and she was pregnant, I guess, and she waddled along and got onto Highway 133, which goes to Laguna Beach. And there are some lagoons inside of the canyon. Laguna was named after, I guess Laguna means lagoon, so it was named by the Native Americans and the Spaniards who lived there. But anyway, to make a long story short, she was looking for a place to hibernate. And she went into this lagoon, and her handlers came after her, and they shot her with a tranquilizing gun. But how stupid, they killed her. Why would you shoot a tranquilizer gun at a sleeping hippo who's, you know, I mean, it was so dumb. And people in the community were just an outrage, an uproar, and that was another negative. Eventually the park closed down, and now it's being turned into homes, you know, the property. The animals were all shipped away all over the world. But anyway, her ghost is still there, and I've seen her several times. And I can't release her. For some reason, she just won't move on. But, I mean, she died, and so did her three babies. And it's very sad. Another time, a person contacted me that owned a private zoo, and they had an elephant on their property, and it was in L.A. County. And they couldn't figure out what was wrong with the elephant. It seemed very depressed. And so they called me and asked if I could come and help them out. And I said, well, I can't guarantee it, but I'll try, you know. So I went out to the property, and I've always loved elephants. And I'm not a person that could just go up to a big animal and hug it. I mean, they used to really scare me. But for some reason, I walked up to the cage where the elephant was, and it was like a big pen area, and there were three of them in there. And I looked at the woman who owned the place, and I said, the problem is that your elephant is pregnant. And she says, that's impossible. This is a male elephant. I said, no, it's not. It's a hermaphrodite elephant. Elephant has both sexes. I mean, you could see the penis was very, you know, very well on display, I guess, you know. And I said, it's a hermaphrodite. And one of the other elephants mated with it, and it got pregnant, but the baby is dead inside of it. And that's why the elephant is depressed. And the elephant wouldn't eat, and it would just sit around all the time. And when I came, I went over, and I petted it, and I talked to it telepathically, and I told it that everything would be fine. And so I guess they had a zoologist come out, and I don't think they can X-ray an elephant, but they brought an ultrasound machine, and through ultrasound, sure enough, they found out that she was pregnant and that the baby had died. So they had to put the elephant to sleep, and they had to open her up and take the baby out. And the elephant actually had more female organs than male organs, just urinated out of the penis, but had ovaries and had a vagina. And I don't know how the owner never knew that, but I guess the elephant was a gift to her. And she had a lot of animals that were from, like, motion pictures and things that people had decided they were, you know, they didn't want to kill the animals, so they would send them off to this place. And it wasn't the wildlife waste station. It was something a little different, but similar, you know, a similar idea. So, I mean, spirits talk to me, but people talk to me, too. People talk to me telepathically occasionally. Another thing I'm able to do as a psychic medium is I'm able to speak to children who are autistic. I don't know how, but sometimes I can talk to them, and they can tell me things that they don't like, or they don't like this blanket, or They don't like the way that, you know, daddy treats them, that, you know, they wish that he'd spend more time with them. It's very, very interesting.
Do you have any theories on what causes autism?
No, I don't. I don't know. I don't know why, what causes it. I think children are powerful. I think some children can turn themselves off. I think sometimes when they don't get their own way, I've seen this, where they throw a temper tantrum.
Uh-huh.
And I've seen children sort of like not respond, and they feel like they're just sort of frozen in time. One time my cousin did that. He used to do it to my aunt. And one time he did it in the bathtub, and she just shook him and slapped him to get him to knock himself out of it. And then he came to. He doesn't remember that now. She doesn't even remember it, but I remember it. And it was freaky. It was a weird thing. He did it a couple of times when I was around them. But so, you know, autism, and autism is on the rise in America today. It's very, like diabetes is on the rise today. Well, part of it, I think, may be that we're eating too many preservative foods with preservatives in them. We've gotten away, our society's gotten away from cooking, eating salads, eating fresh vegetables, you know,
mm-hmm.
eating, you know, chicken, having barbecues. We need to do more of that for ourselves instead of buying frozen foods that are already cooked. And, you know, I mean, I do that once in a while myself, but I'm trying very hard. I grow my own vegetables. I grow my own lettuce and tomatoes, and they don't have pesticides on them. And I don't have to worry about where they come from because I know they come from my garden. So, I mean, and doing that, and I've lost 44 pounds since December just from changing my diet around and not eating processed foods. I mean, I wanted to lose weight anyway, but, you know, and one thing that's very interesting, if you notice, a lot of psychic mediums, the famous ones, are overweight.
Huh.
A lot of them are overweight.
It's
very, not all, but a lot of them. It's very, very interesting. So I think that we use that as sort of a protection, like an armor around ourselves to protect ourselves from, you know, negative people, or we're very sensitive. You know, people talk behind our backs just like everybody else, and it just is one of those things. But I have several, I have three friends that are very well-known psychic mediums, and they're all overweight.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Very, very interesting, yeah.
So, well, everyone, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight is Michael J. Khoury. That's K-O-U-R-I. He's a psychic medium and a parapsychological investigator. Is that right?
Very good. That's correct, yeah. Can we mention my website?
Yeah, that's just what I was going to say. Do you have a website that you'd like to tell people about?
I have two websites, actually. The first one is the letter I, the letter C, ghost. So it's icghosts.com, and it's G-H-O-S-T-S, it's plural. Or they can type in my name, Michael J. Khoury, K-O-U-R-I, into Google, or they can go to michaeljcurry.com, and that'll take you to the IC Ghosts website. I have two websites for that, so it's a lot of fun. I do haunted house walking tours in Pasadena. I have a Hollywood tour. I have a brand new tour coming out in Huntington Beach, which is down in Orange County. I've taken people on specialty tours to Gettysburg and Valley Forge, and I do all kinds of things, and all the tours are on my website. They're a lot of fun because you actually get to go to usually 13 of the most truly haunted places in each of the cities.
Wow.
If they take the evening tour, not only do they get to go to haunted places, but we go to a haunted restaurant for dinner, and then during the dinner I do a little mini psychic aura reading or tell them things about themselves, and it's a lot of fun. And I also bring pendulums, and I show them how to use them. And they can bring ghost-detecting equipment if they want. You know, that's fun, too. But my tours are just, people just love them, and celebrities have taken them, and average people alike. I also do private readings for people if they're interested. They can go to my website, and they can call me and find out what I charge. I do phone readings for people outside of Southern California. Or I can travel anywhere in the world if they want to hire me to come and do an in-person reading or an investigation or a seance. I also conduct seances, but I'm very limited on why or when I'll do a seance. I actually call it a communication circle. That's a term I coined in several of my books because it's less scary, you know. And it is a circle. You're sitting in an oval or a circle, and you're communicating with the spirit world. But I only do that for situations where I feel that that's the best way to be able to communicate with spirit. I won't just do it on a whim. You know, it has to be something that's important.
Wow. So what is it like to see an aura?
Oh, it's beautiful. Auras are beautiful. You can't see auras?
I've seen them a couple of times, you know.
Okay.
Not a lot, but it's not like something I regularly see.
You should come and take my aura chakra class. I teach seminars as well. I teach people how to open up to their psychic abilities. And one of the most popular seminars is where I teach people how to see auras with the naked eye. And you will, by the end of the day, it's an all-day inclusive seminar. By the end of the day, everybody who comes will see auras. You may not see colors, but you'll see white auras and, you know, light colors. But as you practice, then you learn how to see the colors and where to look for them and more about why they exist and, you know. But auras are really, really fantastic. I've been able to see them since I was 8 years old. It's pretty cool. And then the colors depend on, the colors determine what's going on in your life at that moment. Everybody has like a life color, one or two colors that are always the same, that never change. It can be white, it can be lavender or purple or blue or green. But then there are other colors that emanate outside of the life color, and they tell me things about a person, like are they having heart problems, are they in love, or do they not have love in their life, do they not love themselves, are they angry, is money coming to them, or are they spending too much money? It's really amazing what I can see. And then there's combinations of colors. I know when people are sick. I know when people have cancer or leukemia or lupus or diabetes or AIDS even. And I can tell lots of things about people from the color combinations that are formulated around them. Wow. Even orbs, real orbs, sometimes have colors. They have auras around them. And if you blow up a picture of an orb, a real orb, you'll often see a face or an image or a shape of what the shapeshifter is trying to make. I know I'm using a Star Trek term again, but but I use those a little bit here and there because, you know, people can identify with that. They understand it a little better. So, but, I mean, you know, animals have auras. Plants have auras. Water has an aura. Anything that is living has an aura. I was at a friend's house recently, and I saw he had an old couch that somebody had given him. It had been in a garage for a long time.
Right.
And I said, well, it's interesting. Your couch has an aura. And he goes, how can that be? I said, well, I wonder if there's fleas in that couch. And the cat was sitting next to him. The cat was scratching like crazy, and all of a sudden we started scratching like crazy. Well, it was the aura of the fleas, the living organisms, you know, in the couch. And he goes, oh, God, this couch has got to go. I said, well, just have it fumigated. It's a cool old 1970s couch, but, you know, it just needs to be fumigated and then reupholstered.
Right.
But I could see the aura of the couch, and it was really the aura of the fleas. Isn't that weird?
My sister-in-law says she can see the auras of bugs. So
yeah, it's read my mind. I was going to say bugs have auras, moths have auras, spiders do. Everything that's living has an aura. Even sometimes sweaters, like angora sweaters, or they might have the aura of the animal that the fur came from that was spun into thread. Or it might be that the man or the woman who knitted or crocheted the sweater, I have an Irish sweater that came from Ireland, and when it arrived and I opened the box, it had an aura to it. But eventually the aura dissipated, and now the aura is gone. And I wondered if it was the poor woman that had to make the double extra large sweater for me, because that's my size. I'm 6'3" and like 225. I'm a big guy. And broad shoulders and stuff. So she had to make a sweater that was like, you know, two times the normal size that she normally crochets or knits. And they told me she was, you know, they don't like doing big sizes because it takes a lot of work, you know, a lot more work. But I probably saw her aura. And then once I got it and I loved it, it probably now has my aura around it. You know, I don't know, but it's interesting how auras are around every living thing.
It's very interesting.
Even lettuce. Lettuce in a salad at a restaurant will have an aura. It's true.
I totally believe it.
Yeah.
I just want to remind everyone out there that this is a call-in show. So if you'd like to call in and ask a question of our guest, or if you have a comment, we'd love to hear from you.
Sure, I can try to read them too.
I'll give out the number right now. It's toll-free. It's 888-228-4494. So I'll say that one more time in case you didn't have your pen ready. It's 888-228-4494. We'd love to hear from you. So, Michael, one of the interesting things that you had on your website, which I wanted to ask about, was visitations from a religious saint.
Yes, I've had several saints appear to me throughout my lifetime.
I find that fascinating because, you know, not too long ago I read Butler's Lives of the Saints, which is this 5,000-page book, really, at least.
Wow.
5,000, basically the lives of all the saints.
Uh-huh.
And was just really, really impressed by it. And
really?
It's well, basically
who were some of the
life.
Saints that came to you? I mean, who were some of the saints in the book?
Oh, my gosh, there were so many. I mean, there was St. Thomas of, or St. Teresa of Avila, of course. There's Joseph of Cupertino.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many. There was hundreds, and I actually wrote this book, Levitation, Human Levitation. And,
really?
Which
wow.
was actually how I came to that book, because
uh-huh.
you know, so many of these saints have experienced uh-huh. all these things that you're experiencing, which I find fascinating, and I just wonder
well,
what that was like, having these visitations, or could you describe one of them, maybe?
Well, sure. When I was about 16, that's when my abilities really sort of kicked into high gear, and I was going to a Catholic high school in Burbank, California, and this man who was a Lebanese saint, I'm actually half Lebanese, my name Khoury is Arabic, it means priest, actually.
Uh-huh.
And at the time, I was thinking about becoming a priest. I was very Catholic, and I had seen my first spirit I ever saw was in a church and that I was serving as an altar boy. And so it wasn't unusual for me to feel this man around me. His name was Saint Charbel Makhlouf. He was a man that was a monk in Lebanon, and I think it was like 100 years before, you know, had healed the sick and did a lot of wonderful things with his life. And after he died, glowing lights were, you know, shining out of the grave, out of the ground grave that he was in. And they didn't embalm in those days, so he was probably just in a pine box in the ground. And a lot of miracles had happened. People would pray to him, and he would tell them what to do to get healing, and then they would become healed. Well, in 1979, he was officially canonized and recognized in the eyes of the Catholic Church. And my godfather, who was Lebanese, went with our priest from our Lebanese church to Rome to be a part of that mass. And I prayed for him that day, and on that day he appeared to me. He had appeared to me like 16 times in 1979, the year I was 16 years old.
Wow.
And it was interesting. Like, you know, he appeared, you know, once for every year of my life and told me things that would come true. One of the things he told me was that the wars in Lebanon would cease if I could get the world to pray. And I didn't understand that. I thought, well, how's a 16-year-old boy going to, you know, get the world to pray? You know, it was interesting the way it all worked out. But he told me other things that were very personal, which I can't really talk about on the air, but things about my family, things about neighbors, and everything he told me came true. Everything.
Wow.
But let me back up a little bit. When I was 8 years old, eight or nine, my brother and I used to play at this old abandoned school that was called Villa Cabrini Academy in Burbank near our house. My mom actually had gone to school there when she was a teenager. And through the years, the nuns couldn't afford to keep it going, so they tried leasing the property and, you know, doing different things. But that all happened later, of course. So the property sort of sat vacant. And the property was so big. It was an orphanage, and it had a church, and it had a high school building, and it had elementary school buildings. It had an olive grove and apple trees and grape vineyards. I mean, these nuns were very self-sufficient. They had a farm. They raised chickens and eggs. They
wow.
sold the chickens and the eggs to the local markets. You know, we're talking back in the 50s. But Mother Cabrini was the first woman canonized as a saint, a United States saint, or a woman from the United States, you know, as a saint, born in Italy, almost died when she was born, decided she wanted to become a nun because felt that her life was, you know, spared miraculously. She went to Rome, went to the Pope, wanted to be a missionary in China. And he said, no, 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 my daughter, I want you to go to America, and I want you to help the Italian immigrants and the orphans, because a lot of these people had come here, and they were the migrant workers of the time, and we're talking the turn of the century, you know, it would have been like 1900.
Right.
So she set sail for New York, came to New York, and literally set up orphanages and convents just about every city she went. I think she ended up founding like 64 convents and hospitals in her name. You know, during her life. Well, she came to Los Angeles, and she found this property in Burbank, Sun Valley, Burbank, and she started this orphanage. They called it a preventorium in the old days. Excuse me. And a preventorium was a place that people would go that had tuberculosis to sort of dry out. And a lot of people came west. Doctors would say the belief was that if you went west to where the drier climates were, that TB would sort of go away. And for some people that happened, and for other people it didn't. So Mother Cabrini needed a place to pray and sort of get away from the nuns and the people. And so she designed a little tiny one-room chapel that was then built up on a hill above the property. And that chapel was, you know, is still standing today. Well, when I was 8 years old, my brother and I used to ride our bikes to the olive orchard, and we'd pick olives and bring them home, and my mom would cure them and, you know, whatever, because they were just going to waste there. And we used to take our bikes and ride up to the little chapel and pop wheelies in the dirt and, you know, do all the kinds of things that little boys do. And we always tried to look inside, but it had a chain link fence around it that was always locked with a heavy padlock and a heavy chain. And you couldn't see in the windows. There were only two, and they were stained glass. So one day we were up there playing, and my brother was bored, and he decided to go home. And I said, well, I want to stay longer. And it wasn't uncommon for us to be up there by ourselves. I mean, in those days, you didn't really think about the child molesters and the kidnappers. We were just sort of on an adventure. And it was only like maybe 3 or 4 blocks from our home, under the freeway and across the major street, but we did that. So he left, and I was there, and all of a sudden I started to smell incense burning. And I smelled like what smelled like a candle burning. And I looked up into the window, and there was lights glowing on the inside of the building. But we had just looked in before, and there was nobody there. I mean, we tried to get a wooden stump and climb up and look in the windows, and you just couldn't see anything in there. It was black. So I walked around to the front where the door was, and the chain link fence was now open, and the chain was swinging with the lock on the end, and it was open. And the door of the chapel slowly opened, and I saw this woman come out dressed in black in a habit, and she sort of took her index finger, like, you know, come to me, but put another finger up to her mouth and said, shh, and invited me to come in. Now, we were very Catholic, and we had a lot of friends that were nuns and stuff, so I went in the chapel, and I started to pray with her. We were praying the rosary. And there was incense lit, and there were 4 candles lit in the chapel. And they were real. I mean, the fire was there and everything. And she looked as solid to me as you would be to me and I would be to you if we were standing in front of each other right now.
Okay.
Well, the interesting thing was that I also smelled roses, and I looked down at her feet, and she got up and she started walking. We finished our prayer, and she walked me back to the door, and everywhere she stepped, rose petals appeared on the floor.
Wow.
Now, there's another saint that has that happen. I think it's St. Teresa, not of Avila, but one of the other Teresas. But this was Mother Cabrini. And I bent down, and I picked up some of the rose petals, and I asked her if I could have them, and she says, of course you can. So I took them home, got on my bike, said goodbye to her. But before I left, she told me that something phenomenal was going to happen in my life, and that if I believed in God and I prayed strongly, that my life would be spared. So I left, went home, told my mom what she told me, and showed her the rose petals. And my mom just said, oh, you know, Michael, where did you pick those from? My mom sort of thought I was lying. I mean, why would I lie about that? But, you know, you're a little kid, and little kids tell fibs sometimes. So anyway, I took the rose petals, and I put them in my Bible, my personal Bible, and closed the book so that they would dry out. And I just felt like she was a beautiful person. Well, 2 weeks later, I was run over by a car a block from my house. And I could have been killed. I mean, it was a really horrific accident. I was borrowing my brother's bike without permission, of course, and was riding on this sort of a driveway. There was a big vacant lot, and it had this asphalt driveway that trucks could back into to dump whatever their things on or whatever. And we kids would play roller coaster, and we'd go up one side and down the other and around and up, down, and around. And it was only that part of the street cut off the traffic, so it was a one-lane road, you know. And, I mean, there are lots of houses there and driveways and whatever. But that particular day, my friends went home, and I went back, and I was playing roller coaster. And this car came, an old 50s jalopy, and I guess he didn't see me, and he hit me. And my body, you know, went underneath the car, and I was in shock. So I don't really know exactly what happened. To this day, I still don't really know. I know that his back tire was 2 inches from crushing my skull. And I was scratched and scraped. I mean, my clothes were torn to shreds, and my feet were hurting, my legs were hurting, but I was in shock. And people came out. I mean, women were running and screaming, and then bringing towels and ice. And there were dogs were barking. And the guy got out of his car, and his eyes were all glazed over. He was probably high, but in those days, you know, you didn't even know about those things. And he grabbed me, and they pulled me out from under the car. And as I looked up at all the people, I could see these big giant colors all around them. Well, I never saw those colors before. And I didn't know what an aura was yet, so today I know that I was looking at their auras. So, you know, you hear a lot about psychics and people that have traumatic experiences, and all of a sudden their abilities start. Well, that's kind of what I think about my abilities, that they sort of started on that day. And I remember the guy, you know, asked me where I lived, and I told him, and he put me in the back of his car and took the bike out, and it was all munched, you know, put it in the trunk, drove me to my house. My mom had just come home from work, and she was, you know, came out screaming, "Oh my God, my baby, my baby!" My brother standing there, "My bike, my bike!" You know.
Oh my God.
And to this day, he has never let me forget that I ruined his bike, his Schwinn bicycle, without his permission. You know. But the thing is, the miraculous thing is that I healed very quickly, and my mom told me that the doctors told her I probably would never, you know, run and jump again, that my bones had been severely damaged, and but everybody in our church prayed for me, and I mean, I healed very quickly, and I don't remember, you know, it's so long ago now, I'm 44 now, so I don't know how long it was until I saw the Spirit in church, but it was a lady that was cleaning the altar before Mass, and I don't know if you know about Catholics, but the altar boy sort of sets the table and sets the altar up for communion, and I had this little glass tray with two cruets on it with water and wine, and I was walking out onto the marble floored altar, and I saw her, but I could see right through her. I could see the candles beyond her and the flower arrangements on the other side, and the altar was this huge, solid piece of wood, and I saw the veil she was wearing, and she was wearing those old-fashioned kind of stockings that had a seam down the back, you know, and I recognized her immediately, but I was so scared, I dropped the tray with the cruets. They exploded onto the marble floor.
Oh,
people
no.
in the church were like, you know, what's going on? The pastor came running out. He put his hand on my right shoulder, and he said, "Oh, dear God, Michael, can you see her too?"
Wow.
And that was the beginning of my psychic abilities. I mean, in a nutshell, that's how it all started. And I'll never forget that priest. He took me out to lunch that day afterwards, called my mom, you know, asked permission, whatever. And he said to me, he was from Ireland, and he says, "You know, I've been able to see them since I was a little boy. How long have you seen them?" And I said, "Oh, you know, a couple of months." But I didn't understand. I thought everybody could see them at that time, you know. And he says, "Well, are you afraid?" And I said, "No, they're not scary to me. They're just there." But everywhere I went, Preston, everywhere, churches, markets, whatever, I always saw other people behind the live people. But I just sort of assumed that they were regular people because they were solid. They weren't always transparent. I mean, we don't have enough time to talk too much longer, but, you know, there's so much more to spirits. Sometimes they are transparent, and sometimes they're solid. And I think my theory is that the ones that are transparent is their energy is dissipating from the earth plane.
Oh,
it's sort of like just disappearing, you know. So ever since then, I've been able to see spirits. And as I mean, as I got older, I started reading every book I could get my hands on. I read Hans Holzer and Lloyd Auerbach and Jane Roberts. Jane Roberts' books really scared me because she talked about, you know, channeling. And I could hear the spirits talking in my mind, but I would shut them out. I didn't want to hear it. And then as I got older, I realized that I could turn the abilities on or off, you know, a lot like autistic children. I think they can turn it on and off, too. Now, I certainly wasn't autistic. But it's interesting how, you know, that I just thought of that. That's sort of an interesting connection.
Mm.
But so all my life now I've seen them. And then when St. Charbel appeared to me, you know, 8 years later and told me that every year of the anniversary of that car accident, he or some other saint would appear to me and give me another message about my life, about the role that God gave me, and that he gave me these abilities to help other people to understand their spiritual life, their spiritual path, and or to make contact with these spirits and help them to make the final connection to their destiny. And that's really how it's all been. It's interesting. And he or somebody else appears every 10 years.
Wow.
About 2 years ago it was an anniversary, and they didn't appear that day. And I was so disappointed, and I thought, well, maybe they're not going to come this time. Maybe it's finally over. But that night in a dream, 16 saints appeared to me and told me that I was to write a book about modern saints, and that saints weren't all Catholic. There are saints of all religions. Even Buddhists have saints. There's monks that are, you know, holy people, basically.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
I'm sure Princess Diana could be considered a saint. She did a lot of good in her life, her short life, but she did a lot of good to open the eyes of Parliament and the Queen and people, average people alike. Unfortunately, the paparazzi, in my opinion, they killed her, you know. But
right.
It was her time to go. I mean, I think everything happens for a reason, and it really was her time to go. But her life, it doesn't even seem like she's gone. You know, you hear about her every now and then, and you just feel like, oh, yeah, she's still in England and doing her thing, and, you know, but she's not. But she touched so many of us in so many different ways. I actually did a reading for her one time. I met her at an event. I'm also an opera singer. And I was hired to sing for an event when she came to Los Angeles one time. And I met her along with Prince Andrew. And she asked me to dance, or asked for my hand in a dance. It was really interesting. It was all very formal. I was just like, oh, my God, I'm going to dance with a princess. And she was stunning, you know. And it was bad enough that I was the entertainment. I mean, I'm a good singer, but I was so nervous. And we danced to some Elton John music that was being played. We were like the youngest people there, you know. And she asked me about being a medium. And, I mean, I wasn't shocked that she knew, because I had to fill out this huge 28-page interview kind of a sheet, I guess, probably for the Secret Service, you know, and they wanted to know about me. And my mom, I remember my mom said to me, are you going to tell them you're a psychic medium? I'm like, of course. Because if I don't, you know, they may not hire me if they find out that I am and, you know, think that I lied or something. So I was just really honest about it. So she asked me if I would ever consider doing a reading for her. And I said, well, sure, never thinking she'd ever take me up on it. And about 6 months later, I got a phone call that she was coming back to Los Angeles and would I come to her hotel and do a reading for her. I said, sure. Well, anyway, her reading lasted for like 6 hours.
Oh, my
goodness. I mean, it went on and on and on. My average readings are about 1 to 2 hours for the same price. And I get a lot of information in that time. Because I'm so articulate and I'm artistic and very visual, and because of my mediumistic abilities and the sensitivities, I see a lot. So people might say, well, I only have one or two questions. But, you know, one question turns into two questions, which turns into three and four and five. And then pretty soon, you're up to, you know, the second question. There's 10 questions that go with that. And their spirit guides have things to tell them. And pretty soon, before you know it, you know, an hour has gone by. And we're not done yet. So people are often blown away. And I've read for movie stars and celebrities, two Catholic popes, a lot of nuns, some bishops, some fundamentalist Christian ministers. And in fact, one time I did a reading for a minister. Is very famous in California, and I can't mention his name. I would never do that. I never talk about the famous people who are still living. I only would talk about people that are deceased, and I only give out, you know, brief information. I really keep that information very private, like a priest would to, you know, one of his flock.
Sure.
Anyway, this minister came to me and wanted to do a reading, and his son was dying of AIDS, and I guess I think the son had died, and he just wanted to know if the son was still with him and whatnot. And then a couple Sundays later, I happened to be flipping channels on TV, and I came across his sermon. And he was talking about psychics and how you shouldn't go to them because what that they do is evil. Although we had this, like, phenomenal reading, and he told me it was amazing, and he'd been to other psychics, and I would just blew him away, and his wife was impressed, and on and on and on. Well, this is funny, but their phone number flashed up on the screen, and people could call in and ask him questions. So I did, and I got through. And I said, you know, good morning, Reverend so-and-so. I said, you know, my name is Mike. And I said, you know, I'm a little confused because you just talk to people about not going to psychics, but I'm a psychic medium. And I came to you and I did, in your words, a phenomenal reading for you and your wife from your dead son 2 months ago or whatever it was, you know. Oh, my God, mm-hmm. You should have seen the face on TV. He just turned bright red. And I said, you know, you told me that the information I gave you was holy information. And I'm just shocked. I'm a little hurt that you would say this on the air to millions and millions of viewers around the world. So what do you really believe about this? I mean, why would you come to a psychic medium that you met from somebody at a party? I mean, I met him at a party, a celebrity party I was at. Why would you come to somebody and then get on the pulpit and talk about how evil psychics are? We're not evil. This gift is a gift from God, just like your gift to help people. Your counseling gift is a gift from God. Well, of course, they hung up the phone. You know, it just hung up, and I didn't call back. But my point was that I was glad that I had the opportunity to do that. Right. And not that I'm trying to out people or I'm trying to, you know, be mean to people, but I really believe God gave me these gifts to help people. And it really hurts my feelings. It makes me angry when, you know, people take advantage of others and those people give people like me a bad name. You know, we don't make it up. The information comes to us. And I can't read everybody. I can't read them all the same. Some people get phenomenal readings and some people get mediocre readings. But the thing is that I believe that what you hear at the time of the reading may not be exactly what you want to hear, what they want to hear. And that's why people feel disappointed. You know, I can't guarantee that if you call me for a reading that I'm going to be able to contact your Aunt Martha, who died in 1952, who is your favorite aunt. It just doesn't work like that. She may have already reincarnated. But on the other hand, she might come through, you know. And I find it really fascinating the way the psychic abilities work. But psychics are different than mediums. And if you're going to have a really good reading once in your life, find a medium who is clairaudient, clairsentient, clairvoyant. Because there are others of me, you know, like me out there, and we really do have the best connection to answer questions about your life. Now, if you want to just find out if you're going to have a baby or get a raise at your job, don't call me. That's not what my abilities are for. Go to the Santa Monica Pier and go to a tarot reader or a palm reader. I mean, I hate to say that, but, you know, but that's not what my abilities are for. My abilities are to help you understand why you're here and what you're supposed to be doing. Now, during the throes of the reading, we can ask those questions, but I can't tell you, like, you know, go to Las Vegas and go to a certain place and bet on this machine or bet on this horse. I don't get that. If I did, I certainly wouldn't be here right now, you know.
Well, you know what, Michael? We're pretty much out of time, we're going to have the show actually is ending a little bit earlier. Now it starts, or it ends at 7:50.
Oh, okay.
So, but do you want to give out your website? And,
yeah, my website again is the letter I, the letter C, ghosts, ghosts.com, ICghosts.com, or Michael J. Curry, KOURI.com. Or if they just Google me, Michael J. Curry, on a Google search or any of the search engines, they'll find me.
All right. Well, you know, Michael, gosh, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show.
Sure. Thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, you're amazing. And your story, I'm definitely going to have to get a reading from you one of these days.
Well, that'd be great. Well, I'd love to come on again. If you ever have a spot, let me know.
Oh, definitely. I'm sorry we didn't get any callers.
Continue the conversation.
Yeah, you certainly have an amazing story to tell. And
thanks a lot.
And it was a joy speaking with you.
Great. Well, you take care.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, everyone, that's our show tonight. You've been listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett. And our guest tonight has been Michael J. Curry. That's K-O-U-R-I. And definitely you should check out his website. It's very, very interesting. Well, that's it for now. I hope you can join us next week when we have another exciting guest. And until then, have a wonderful evening and a great week.
Ooh.